Source Elements on the Mic, a brand new weekly series of conversational but thought-provoking podcasts with Mike Ayton, leading voiceover artists, post-production mixers, and music engineers. A heady mixture of audio opinion, observation, learning, philosophy, reminiscence, and downright humour. Muse, audio, and remote working with Mike and his guests. Stay well connected and treat your ears to Source Elements on the Mic.
Hello, welcome to Source Elements on the Mic with Mike Ayton. In episode 3 of Source Elements on the Mic, we met voice actress and award-winning podcaster Cecilia Ramsdale from Melbourne. We discovered her love of non-nude hobnob biscuits. We played What's Your Source? And we found out that she is totally an apple girl through and through. She breathes through her nose well. Yeah, really. She was weaned on Cool Edit Pro. She enjoys vinyl and started in the industry as a radio producer. Like most of us, she has done her penance in good old hospital radio. She shared with us her story of starring as a Lady Gaga probiotic. And we discussed taking direction from others and also how to humanise your performance. We discussed pauses. But we pick up the discussion now in episode 4 with learning in the industry. How do you think learning in the industry has changed now, for better or for worse?
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so interesting.
Because you're, like me, part of that generation that found your way through the sort of quite what I call the neoclassical route. But those routes are stopped. I was the last sound trainee the BBC ever took on, and I'm 55 now in television. Yeah, I'm 55 now.
It's such a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, people say, how did you get into the BBC? And I go, well, I found my way.
Yes.
And it kind of, if you need to ask the question, you'll never know the answer.
Yeah, it's a real shame.
In a way, without wanting to be spiteful, you'll find your own way, you know.
I think you, and you probably did back then too, you really have to want it. And there has been certain things that I've done along the way that, or that I've wanted to do that haven't come, like haven't worked out the way I thought they would. Like I wanted to be a radio presenter and I was terrible at it.
Yeah.
I was really bad at talking to myself in a room. You know, with a script I'm fine, and with someone else, like the banter, I'm good at that. But sitting there by myself and saying, oh, another NXS song coming up soon. Like I was just awful at it. And so but I had to have a go to find out. And so I did. But no, I think the problem.
So you weren't afraid of failure?
No. I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
And you can recognise failure.
Yeah.
There's a lovely sentiment I once read that said, success is the ability to recognise failure.
Yes. Well, also, if it doesn't feel good, you're not going to want to keep doing it. Like that's getting down to the basics of it. But no, so I went to university and I studied a particular course that was all about commercial radio, and that's how I got into radio. So I did do study to sort of get there. I did work my way up from there. And the...
I did chemistry.
Did you?
And got into the BBC.
Oh, well, there you go. That works. Yeah. Science. It is science.
It is.
I went to get some specific training on accent and voice when I started doing voiceovers, and I realised if I wanted to do character work and animation that I was going to have to improve in certain aspects. Mm-hmm. And like I said at the beginning, I loved doing accents, but I didn't really know what I was doing. I just kind of listen and mimic. So I wanted something that was a bit more, I don't know, like a formal or some things I could fall back on, notes and what have you. So for a long time I worked with a voice coach to do that specifically. And then I did some acting lessons again for that. Just but it wasn't anything sort of formal, and it wasn't voiceover related. It was just broader. But these days there's so many, I mean, even I run like a voiceover workshop for beginners a couple of times a year, and we run it in a professional studio. But that's the point of difference I feel for the one that I run with this guy, Andy Wells, who, again, he's a little bit older than me and came through radio and was an audio producer and then started doing voiceovers that way. So he's been a more organic sort of route as well. But so we try to impart the idea of this is what it's like to work in a studio with someone directing you. These are the pressures. This is how you behave. This is what's expected of you. So all that kind of old school stuff through the workshop. But there's so many online things and there's so many people that want to take your money.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And indeed, how does the youngster now or the new person's differentiate between the wheat and the chaff?
It's really hard.
Because my hobby is playing the guitar, well, one of them, and there's everyone and their dog has got a course promising to unlock the fretboard in 3 minutes. And
yeah,
I happen to like jazz, and I know that after 15 years of studying the cello at school and things, I gave it up after a while and taught myself guitar. But
yeah,
music theory takes years to learn. Jazz takes even more.
Yeah.
Wes Montgomery didn't wake up one morning knowing how to play jazz. You know,
no.
It was a lifetime of study and hard work.
Yes.
And there's no substitute for those 10,000 hours. But there's a lot of people who promise.
Yeah, and I think that's the difficulty, isn't it?
Take my 3-day filmmaking course. You can learn how to do voiceovers in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's really difficult. I think even the starting out is difficult now. I mean, it's easier in some ways because you can set yourself up at home and with a decent room you can sound pretty good and you can buy a microphone that's okay to start with and you can start auditioning for things and, you know, get yourself a few jobs and then you're sort of up and running and then you can build upon that and build upon that. So that's sort of the way you have to do it these days. But then I read this great blog post the other day. It was a British voiceover, actually, and he'd written this thing. And he said, we in the voiceover community, we're very friendly people and we want people to succeed around us and we're, you know, always welcoming and encouraging. But you have to be realistic with people. You have to say to them, don't think that you're going to set yourself up and the jobs are just going to come rolling in. It can take you 2, 3, 4 years to establish yourself.
Yeah.
And that's going back to the relationships thing, but it's also navigating who does what where and how much you're worth and what you can charge. And like, there's so many levels to it, which I didn't have to do any of that starting out.
Yeah. So those same challenges are still there. They haven't changed, even though the industry has changed to a degree.
Yeah.
But do you find that a lot of the newcomers have a little bit like the sort of the YouTube aspirational thing where, in the same way with music, everyone thinks, you know what, Lady Gaga and Sting make bucket loads of money and everyone else earns nothing. And, you know, I've always found the creative world is to a large degree always like that. It's always triangular and pyramidal. Mm. And the people at the top do really, really well and everyone else is scrabbling at the bottom. It's hard.
It is hard.
And I wonder if the youngsters have unrealistic expectations because of the YouTube phenomenon and the sensation of likes.
I think it's slightly different. I think a lot of younger people want to get into it now because they're into gaming. So they want to do gaming voices rather than commercial voices. So I think we come across, when we run the workshops, we come across a lot of people that are game-oriented, so they want to make the characters for games. And it's quite interesting because I have only ever done a few voices for video games because it is like a parallel universe to what I've done over the years. And so,
yes, I've never mixed sound for games ever.
No.
I've done plenty of TV and film, but not games.
It is. It's like this other universe that just runs along next to us and you have to work out which gate to open to kind of look in there and try and work out what's happening. So I think for the younger generation, and a lot of that is it's a much smaller pool of people in that, you know, you might have a game developer that's only 2 or 3 people and they're looking for voices to voice the characters in their game. So they'll advertise their auditions on Twitter or through a couple of other websites that are specifically aimed at people who are gamers. So they've got this whole community that they talk to each other and then they share and they've got people who do the casting. So it doesn't run the way the old school voiceover way has always run. So it's really interesting. As I said, I sort of dabble, but I find that it takes a lot of brain space to navigate and I don't have much time to do that at the moment. But, you know, maybe when I'm 70.
It's a bit like you have to kiss a lot of frogs to find a prince and you haven't got time to kiss that many frogs.
Yeah. But then again, you know, coming back to relationships before we move on, I did do one voice for a guy who's an Australian developer a while ago, 6 months ago or so, and it was literally one line for a like a PA system saying, you know, evacuate the building. And he sent me an email the other day and he said, oh, my PA system's back. Can you do another couple of lines for me? Do you mind? I said, no, sure. So I did that, sent it over, and he was like, oh, and I've got this other character. Would you be interested in doing that? And I was like, okay, sure. So, you know, it's just like planting seeds here, there, and everywhere. And I do love the fact that it's opened up the internet and you can do that yourself. You're not reliant upon if you've got an agent to do all of that work for you. Because I used to get very frustrated when I felt like I'd been cornered into doing, you know, certain sorts of jobs, a lot of radio ads, but then there would be none. And I couldn't do anything about it. But now, because, you know, you can, I've got clients in the US and clients in the UK and people all in between.
Yes, it's like what I would call the vertical tranche of work, where you can get locked into a seam of doing certain style of working, and it's quite hard to break across into a different seam and start straddling and swimming up and down that stream. It's because I'm only in my stream and it keeps me busy. And
people can only see you in one way. That's interesting too. Mm.
Yes, and that's, for me personally, a disadvantage in that my skill is an all-rounder. I can do most things. But I'm not an expert in anything.
Me too.
And for some people, jack of all trades is a great strength. For other people, it can be a curse. Because we want the Paganini for this one, and you're not the Paganini.
Yeah.
No, but I can do a good impression for a bar or two.
Yeah. That's always been a difficulty with radio as well. But anyway.
What nuggets did you learn early on in your career that have stayed with you?
Probably the idea that you're only as good as your last job. So don't go in there and be an idiot. Dot your I's and cross your T's. I do remember my first job out of uni, my manager sitting me down and saying that. You need to dot your I's and cross your T's. Oh, okay, all right. So finish off what you start.
Yeah.
And just be good to work with. You know, don't be difficult. I do find that really strange, you know, and I think it's an ego thing. That maybe you get a lot of people that think it's very...
The artistic persona.
Yeah, that it's this glamorous, amazing thing. And no, just be good to work with.
I'm not going in front of the microphones unless I have blue M&Ms.
And even just kind of understanding, and this is one thing we sort of try to do with our people when we do our workshops as well in the studio, is the etiquette of it. With so much more online now, there's less of that as a problem. But you need to know whose role is whose and to appreciate that. And I think that's really important. And even things like we always say, which I feel like such an old fuddy-duddy, but, you know, if you're sitting in the studio and someone's performing or someone's reading a script, then you don't talk while they're doing it. You listen. And then if there's a discussion point at the end, then you can discuss it. But you give everyone the space, and if you're working, you need to be able to hear what's going on. So just things like that, you know?
Okay, on the point, interesting, that of etiquette, do you prefer open or closed talkback between takes?
Closed.
I'm of the generation where I was brought up where talkback was always closed, and the producer only talks to you when he wants to and presses the button. The younger generation are much used to, the second you stop record, the talkback's open and everyone can hear everything.
Oh, yeah, no.
But I've always thought that never allows that little moment for the director to turn around and go, do you think that was
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
No, I want the talk back on as soon as it's finished. There is nothing worse than standing in a soundless booth with headphones on and knowing that the people on the other side of the glass are talking about you. It's not good. You need to know what they're saying, you know. And it's quite funny because and always if that happens, then they press the talk back and they have to repeat what they just said. So it's just, as soon as you stop talking, you need the talk back on and then you can hear what their reaction is. And usually it's not even what they're saying, but it's the way they've reacted to what you've done that you can pick up on as well.
Okay.
The world is a melting pot of ideas. Connect to the Global Creative Village. Collaborate with class-leading synchronization, audio, and picture. Innovative, affordable, and flexible solutions with enviable support. Be a part. Create together. Source Elements.
changing tack slightly, studio chairs, is sitting the new smoking? Are you a stander or a sitter?
Only sit for books. I always stand if it's okay. Anything, I was going to say normal, anything that's not going to take you 20 hours, stand up.
Is that a breathing thing?
Yeah, I think, well, I always did stand up, so it was just a habit thing. But then the more I learned, and then reading that book, James Nestor book about breath, and also reading all of the voice books like Patsy Rodenberg and all of the books that are about how to connect with your breath and your voice and all of that, all of them say stand because you have then better connection with your whole body and your breathing apparatus. So you do a much better job if you're standing. But, yeah, if you are doing it for a very long time, it's very hard to stand for that entire time. And you sort of get into your groove when you do an audiobook as well. You find a rhythm and a comfortable sort of spot and you just lean into that.
I've always imagined, I mean, it's obviously not what I'm the other side of the glass always, but if you're reading a book, it's almost like you should be in a comfortable armchair sort of thing. There's that sense of firesideness.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're uncomfortable, it comes through. Mm. You can hear that.
Okay. So let's now briefly touch on the subject of the pandemic and remote working. So how has the pandemic affected your work?
Well, yes, it's been interesting, hasn't it? I was very lucky that I had a very rudimentary setup at home anyway. Now it's, you know, slightly less rudimentary, still in my cupboard, but that's fine. So I was ready to go. I didn't have Source Connect set up, so I did have to do that, but that was the only thing, and that was fine once I worked out how to make it work. It's been like a godsend, really, to be able to connect with people. Even the closest one I have done is, I'd say it would be about a kilometre from my house.
Yep.
We had to do a session because we weren't allowed to be in the same place. So we did that a little while ago.
You could
ago.
Almost do that with cans and string.
I know. It was pretty funny. Yeah, but, I mean, I felt very lucky because everything that I was doing, I was narrating a TV show at the time that just moved to online. That was the biggest thing that I was worried about, how we were going to do that. I have done all kinds of jobs.
What percentage of your work would you say is remote? Is it 100% now because you're in lockdown?
100%.
And
100%.
And how do you see working post-pandemic? Do you think there'll ever be a, well, if indeed there will ever be a post-pandemic, but do you see more people now attuned to the concept and the relaxation of remote working?
I think it's interesting for the big studios. I know that, say 6 years ago, 6-7 years ago, I remember looking at setting up something at home because I had two small children and live about an hour away from most of where the studios were. So I was looking at that as an option. And I remember having a conversation with one of the big studios, the guy who owned it, and he was like, oh, we would never, never hire anyone that's got their own home studio. So that's just off, you'd be off the table. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. As it turns out, I do work with them now from home and it's fine. But I think for those businesses that have invested heavily in these beautiful, amazing studios that can do Dolby sound and all of the stuff that are mostly for post, like it's hard for them, obviously. But I think for voiceover, we're so lucky because we can do what we need to do mostly. And I've got a really good sound where I am because it's got double glazing in the room, it's all heavily insulated, so that the sound that they get is as good just about as if I was there. So
yeah.
Yeah, I think we're really, as an industry, we're really lucky. Like my husband's a freelance cameraman and his work basically evaporated overnight. So he wasn't allowed to go out and shoot things. So it's been really interesting to see the difference because my work ramped up because then the interesting thing, I keep saying interesting, but it is interesting.
Does he light your Zoom meetings to make you look fantastic?
He did for a couple, yeah.
Yeah.
So interestingly, he does a lot of work with this production company, and when COVID came along last year, they did this wonderful shift where they have animators that work for them. So they started doing, instead of going out and shooting things, they were doing animations for their clients and I was voicing them. So they'd send over the animation and the script and I'd just make sure the timing matched as well as I could and send it back. So the work that he was doing sort of shifted more into my corner. So it was quite strange, but...
So you could absorb it, yeah.
Sort of. I didn't get paid as much as he would for the day, but still it was good that we could still continue that sort of work. And a lot of the work changed too last year. So a lot of the advertising that was happening disappeared because, you know, you weren't advertising travel or new cars or restaurants or experiences. Any of that stuff was sort of gone. But it became messaging. So I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, then, there aren't many adverts for respirators, are there?
No.
On TV.
No, but there all of a sudden became a lot of ads that weren't ads. So they weren't advertising a particular product, but they became, we're here for you during this really difficult time. You might not be ready to buy a new car, but when you are, we're here for you, like that kind of stuff. It was really fascinating to see how the industry...
The empathy style
shifted.
Got huge.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
How do you find working remotely personally?
There are pros and cons. I do have two small children, so they've become very good at when I say, right, I've got to go up and record something. They know that they need to give me some space and they're quiet. And they've done some voiceovers themselves from home, so that's been really handy as well. But
I like that, earning their keep.
They are earning. I'm putting it away for them in their little fund that they don't know about. It's been really good because, like I said, I am an hour by car in traffic from most of the studios. So for the vast majority of my time living where I live, like for the last 10 years, and having small children, and quite often jobs would come late, like you'd get a call to say, oh, can you go and record this thing in 2 hours? Like, and I'd be like, oh, okay, yep. So I'd spend 2 hours in the car, be in the studio for sometimes 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half an hour, maybe an hour max, spend twice as long getting there and home as doing the job. And so it's
inefficient, yeah.
Yeah, completely inefficient. So I think a mix is good though. And I find doing audiobooks at home really hard. I think you need to get out of the space. But to be able to just even, you know, someone will ring or send me an email and just say, oh, when you get a chance, can you just read this line for me? And I literally just pick up my laptop, walk up to my bedroom, plug it in, close all the doors and curtains, record it, send it off, it's gone. Like, it's done. It's instant and it's amazing. So lucky. Blessed.
At Source Elements, we've had a philosophy that when you're apart, making things together helps us feel connected as human beings and creates a bond.
Mm.
Have you found that?
Yes. I mean, I do miss it. I've said many times that relationships are such a big part of what we do. And so I do miss that opportunity to just sit and not be mum and not be the boring person at home and be able to go out and be myself and wear lipstick and, you know, talk to these people that I've known for years, that I've worked with, that I have in jokes and all that stuff. You miss all of that stuff. Of course you do. So but definitely. But the other thing I like to do if I'm not using like a direct, if I'm just recording something to send, I often just talk to the person in the recording in between takes. So I'll just send them the file and it will have me going, okay, so I'm just having a look at the script and I think I need to do it this way. So I'll have a go, and if that's not quite right, just let me know. And so I've had a few people send me emails back saying, that's hilarious. I'm like, well,
yeah.
It's like
I enjoyed the chat, even if it was one way. Yeah.
That's right.
It helps your personality come across. That's great, I think.
That's right. And again, why would you take yourself too seriously?
Indeed.
Source Elements.
Are you predominantly using Source Connect for your workflow?
I think it's a mix. It depends on the studio. So the radio stations here don't seem to be on board Source Connect, so we don't really use it for them, but most of the main studios do, so that's really great. The thing, though, I love is I do some work with some guys called Procom in the States. They're in North Carolina, I think. And I use it with them. So that blows my mind every single time I get on with them and I'm talking to this American guy in his studio on the other side of the world. It's, you know, the day before I'm existing in, which always blows their mind, which I love. And
you hand it over secondhand. Here, have tomorrow, have my secondhand. Yeah.
I don't think you can ever get your head around the time difference thing. And it's, you know, it's crystal clear. Like, it's amazing. As I said, I've worked with studios in Sydney, so that's, what, 1,200 kilometres away. Brisbane, that's another 1,800 kilometres or something. I was a slow adapter for Source Connect, but no, I'm glad I got on board because it's, again, it's also one of those things, like I was saying with the website, I think if you have Source Connect standard at least,
yes,
people go, oh, okay, you're serious. You've got this. You understand. Yeah.
It's kind of, yeah. I always think of it as analogy-wise as, if you were driving from London to Edinburgh every day, yes, you could cycle it, but if you were going to go every day, you'd want a 7 Series BMW and do it in comfort and know that your car is reliable and trustworthy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I like that analogy. That's good. I'm just trying to think of how many jobs that I would do. Yeah, I'd say maybe 50-50.
Okay. Mm. What advice would
I'm doing one tomorrow too, by the way.
Great to hear. What advice would you pass on to someone who's trying this sort of workflow for the first time?
I would say just spend a bit of time making sure you're getting it set up. So just get it set up on your computer, work out how it's all going to fit together with your interface and your mic. And once you've done that, you just go in and hit go. So, you know, spend some time in the beginning and it's all ready to rock. And I would also say too that, you know, every time the invoice comes in and on a monthly basis, I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'll get a job like the next day and I'm like, okay, well, that paid for itself. That's good. Next month, yep. Same thing happens. So,
yep.
You know, put it out into the universe.
Are there any potential pitfalls to avoid, you would say, to anyone who's trying this as a new workflow?
Oh, look, the only thing that I really struggled with, and I think we've established I'm a bit of a Luddite, is that you have to have the iLock license. So I remember sitting, it was a nice day, nice afternoon, I had a glass of wine, sitting outside trying to get it sorted out on my computer, and I really struggled to get the iLock license to talk to the Source Connect account that I had made. And I'm sure that was something that I'd done where I'd set it up with a different password or whatever. But that was the only thing that I would say you need to look out. Just make it straightforward for yourself by going through the process and watching the YouTube videos, because once you set it up, it's easy.
Yeah.
But that getting it to talk to the two parts was the bit that made me go, oh gosh, why is this not happening?
Have you had to use support at all?
Yes, in the beginning I did. Yeah. Yeah.
How was your experience?
Good. I mean, I think it was just when the pandemic was hitting, so they were pretty snowed under. But no, they were great. They got back to me really quickly and I can't remember exactly, but I got it sorted out pretty quickly. So my husband laughs and says I have computer kryptonite, so if something's going to go wrong, it's usually me pressing the wrong buttons, and then he comes over and just goes, and it works. So, yeah.
What is your recipe for your success, do you think? What's your top ingredient?
I think loving it. I just wouldn't want to do anything else. I mean, I do other things which I love as well, but if someone said to me tomorrow you can't do voiceovers anymore, I would just be devastated. And I think it's because it's always different. You know, like I'll get an email to say, oh, that you've got, like, I've got a job tomorrow where I'm using Source Connect and I've got to do a 30-second commercial and a 60-second commercial for an electricity company.
Or I've got to be a soap bubble.
Yeah. Well, you don't know.
Or Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Lady Gaga. Or I had to do one a little while ago for the Navy, which was a VR for new trainees on submarines. And I had to be a character who was a marine biologist. And I had to, like, talk to the character and to other people in the crew. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I've never been on a submarine, but the sound engineer had the sounds of the submarine, like, playing for me to give me the atmosphere of it. It's like, what kind of a job is this? This is amazing.
Yeah, it's playtime. Creativity.
Yeah, exactly. Play. Yeah. And even tomorrow when I've got these, like, commercials, well, radio commercials are pretty bog standard mostly, but I'm really looking forward to it because I love this brand. I love working with the guy who's the creative on it. He's really fun. And I don't know what these ads are going to be. So that's the other thing. You walk in and it's like, okay, what have we got? All right, let's work out how we make that work. The challenge.
Okay. It's interesting because that's a common theme. Everyone says it's the variety and the challenge.
Mm.
It seems to be what people seem to enjoy the most.
Yeah.
Okay. What would be the one thing you would like our listeners to take away from our conversation today?
I would say that if you want...
Apart from how marvellous Source Connect is, of course.
Yes. Well, it is. I would say trust yourself, okay? So this sounds really corny and like self-help book, but really, like, you are the only version of you. So it can get... And what I mean by that is I think when you really want to do something and be part of something, and I have seen this with people who are starting out, they listen to every demo of every person. They take every course, they watch every online video, and so they get immersed, and then they get into the tech and which microphone should I buy, and this one's $1,000, and, you know, so they go down this rabbit hole and they sort of talk themselves out of doing it because they don't think they're good enough. I would say just don't do that. Just work out what's interesting to you and do that.
That's very interesting, because as a pathetic guitar player that I am, which is why I'm this side of the glass.
I'm sure you're not.
No, trust me. You're very kind.
You're better than me. I can't play at all.
A lot of guitar players try and mimic other guitar players, and that is a pathway to learning. But you can end up being a second-rate copy of Keith Richards, or a copy of, you concentrate on that one particular person's style. And people like that never develop their own style. They'll never have their own voice. And I think there can be a great danger of if you need to absorb from other people, but then you need to take that bit of him, that bit of that, that bit of Joe Pass, that bit of Pat Metheny, that bit of John Scofield, that bit of Eric Clapton, and you need to kind of put it together and give it the you factor.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you just listened to Keith Richards and you idolised him, you would think, well, I'm never going to be that good, so I just won't try. Yeah.
And why does anyone ever have a bottom E string on their guitar? Because he only plays with five strings on his guitar, famously.
And also, he's like 170 years old, so he's been playing guitar for 150 years. So, you know, that's a lot of time to be getting some...
yeah, he ought to be good at it by now. Yeah,
that's right. Well, that's the same thing with voice people. It's like you can't listen to someone's demo and go, oh gosh, they're so good, I'm never going to be that good. Well, they might have been doing it for 15 years.
And maybe that's all they do, is that one thing.
That's right.
Now, can I ask you a slightly difficult question? I'm almost slightly loath to ask it, but...
Okay, we might pass. Go
I
on.
Kind of think I have to. Is it more difficult being a woman in your career than being a man? And I'm slightly loath to ask that, because whenever I book someone or want to work with someone, I never think, are they a man or a woman? I always think they're blah and they have those skills and that's what I want. And I don't tend to like to have to view someone's sexual identity as relevant. Yeah, why do I care about the gender? I don't.
Gender.
But it is an issue for a lot of people. And I wondered, have you encountered any problems along the way? Have you got any advice for anyone or any thoughts about this as a subject?
Well, it is an interesting question, and no, I have no problem answering it. So I would say that a lot of the time it depends on the fashion of what's going on. So it also depends on the context. Here in Melbourne, but also in the other states, because they're all owned by the same company, we have radio stations, or a company that will own two radio stations, one that's skewed to a female audience and one that's skewed to a male audience. If you stop and you listen to the ad breaks on those radio stations, you quite often get the same client, but they will have ads voiced by a male for the male station and a female for the female station. So it's really interesting, because they are identifying that their audience is more likely to purchase something if they're listening to this male station, if it's a male selling it to them rather than a female, and vice versa. So that's the way they're looking at it. So, you know, in terms of that, there's been a lot of times where I've come in and I've done the female version of something, which kind of seems a bit arbitrary and strange, but it depends on the client, depends on the product. It depends. A lot of the time, people aren't sure whether they want a male or a female.
And have they asked you to mimic the male version in a female way, or do they allow you the ability to be you?
Yeah, usually they just give you the script and say, okay, this is the version that we're going with. So, and if you understand the station, that kind of makes sense anyway. But interestingly, I would say that the voice of authority is still usually male. But I think there's a shift in that now. And Andy, who I mentioned before that I do the voiceover workshops with, he was saying that he thinks there's a lot more work available for females than males these days, which I think is interesting. So, and he works as an audio producer as well, and he does a lot of castings. So he was saying that in his observation, that's what he's seen. So, I mean, advertising is different to other things, sure. But, no, I think there's a big shift. And even going back to the games castings, quite often now they will, especially games that are being made in the States, they'll say, you know, looking for a person of colour or someone that's from an LGBTQ or someone who identifies as non-binary. Well, I can tell you, when I first started out, that was not happening. Everyone would have gone, what? Yeah. What are you talking about? And even in advertising, I don't think that's more for characters, I think. So try and, if there's those characters that identify in that way, they try to get people who also identify in that way. And I think that's a good thing. Yeah. Why not? Because the days of putting on a dodgy French accent are kind of few and far between now, I think.
Exactly. I remember my son
came home from school once, and when he was at primary school, he said, Daddy, we had a French lesson today. So I said, great. What did you learn, Matthew? And he said, I went up to the teacher and said, what does hoi-ho mean? Because it's the way we always mock French ski instructors.
Yes. Hoi-ho-ho. Of course. And she said, did she have an answer?
No. She was very confused. Mm.
That's very funny.
Source elements.
Okay. Now also another slightly difficult question maybe. How do you feel about rates in the industry? Have you found them rising, lowering? Are they fair?
So I'm glad you asked that question.
It was always a point of contention.
I think that people need to charge the appropriate rate. And I think it's a race to the bottom for everyone if you start going on Fiverr and charging $20 a script. I just think it does no one any good. And, yeah, you might make $20, but was it worth it? Because the next time that client comes to you, they're going to expect you to do it for $20. Sometimes you do look at what you get paid for something and you go, wow, that didn't work for long and that's a big check. But it's about the usage and the fact that as soon as you walk out of there, they can use that. It's completely out of your hands. So the fact that there are industry set rates, I think, is really important. And also, not everyone can do it. You know, I think there's this misconception when people are starting out, or people that think it's not worth anything, and they will, I mean, I do know of some sort of lower end players. I don't want to give too much away, but I know a bunch of people that have used these sort of lower end online things. And by the time they've had things reread a few times because what they got in the first place was rubbish, it's ended up costing them what it would have cost to go and get a professional anyway.
Yes, there's that lovely quote, if you think a professional's expensive, try hiring an amateur.
Exactly. Yeah. So now I'm very passionate about the rates being adequate. Yep.
I see a great parallel. Another hobby of mine is photography. And there's a great parallel where everyone who's got an iPhone thinks they're a photographer.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. No, they're not. Yeah.
And the definition of a professional photographer, and, you know, I find if I'm interviewing anyone for a magazine piece or anything, I have to go away and in any lighting condition be able to capture a nice portrait that's printable up to A4 size in a magazine.
Yeah.
That's going to look good, that the client's going to be happy with, that the magazine's going to be happy with.
Yeah.
And that takes a certain amount of skill. Okay, I'm not David Bailey, but effectively, that's what you're paying for is skill and skill being able to deliver a professional product.
Yeah, and this is the problem that creatives have. So, no, I think it's really important. And, yes, some of those online things, Fiverr particularly, just even the name of it does my head in. I'm like, no, just get off that. Don't be on that. That's not...
Yeah. Is Australia like America where there are union jobs and non-union jobs?
No, we have a union that sets the rates for advertising. So what, TV, radio, commercials, and online online commercials, but it's mainly commercials that they set it for, then anything that's sort of out of that scope, the agents sort of set a fee that they all agree around. So, you know, corporate sort of fees, videos, that kind of thing. And so that gets negotiated, the rate gets negotiated with the advertising council every couple of years, I think. So, and I think it's about, so for up to five radio commercials, it's $365 for 1 hour and up to 3 months usage. So that's the kind of one that you get the most when it comes to radio. Well, I do anyway.
You've mentioned that you have an agent and you've had several agents along your pathway.
Yes.
What percentage of work do you find comes self-generated, or does everything you get go via your agent to make sure you're looked after?
I would say probably 90% of my voice work is through my agent.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's always been the bigger part for me. Although I have started doing sort of a little bit more outside of that. And I have a really, again, great relationship with my current agent. And it's really good because she's happy for me to kind of go looking elsewhere for jobs. And she said, as long as you feel that you're getting paid appropriately and where you think I fit into the scheme, then let's discuss that, which is great. Because I don't feel like I'm sort of going behind her back or any of that kind of weird stuff.
So she has an open relationship rather than the closed
yes.
one with you.
We have an open relationship.
For want of a better term.
I like that.
Yeah. Sorry. But, I don't mean to be inappropriate.
No, it's very funny. So, for example, I'm about to host a podcast series for a client, and it's a commercial podcast. So it's basically, you know, about their industry, and they're a building company, so it's about how to build your first home sort of thing. So I haven't started that because I've got to wait till we're out of lockdown. But when they first came to me and they said, how much would you charge for this? I was like, oh, my gosh, I have no idea. And so I spoke to my agent and I was like, look, I've got this thing. What do you think? And so she sort of, together we worked out what we thought was a fair amount, which seemed like a lot, but it is a commercial, you know, partnership sort of thing. So I went to them and I said, well, this is what we were thinking. And they came back after a little while and said, yeah, sure, they want you to do it. They love you. And so I went back to my agent and I was like, okay, so do you want to handle this from here on in? She was like, yeah, sure, great. But, you know, it was great because it was a real negotiation. So that can be really difficult.
Yeah. So ultimately it was an easy negotiation.
It was.
And that's the kind of way it should be.
Yes, but I find, you know, having an agent, I know there's some people that don't want one, or they've been in the industry for a long time and don't feel like they need it, or they haven't had the opportunity to have one for whatever reason. Like, I have a great friend who is a great voiceover, has been in radio for a long time, but he doesn't have an agent because he sounds very radio. So a lot of the agents are like, now everyone wants the conversation sort of read. So he doesn't really fit the stereotype at the moment. So it's a shame because he just, you know, that's the way it goes.
Like ignoring someone who's talented, Even though it's 98 degrees in the city today.
That's right. Yeah, so...
it's hot, hot, hot. Okay, I'll ask you the last question. What would you like as your audio epitaph?
Oh, gosh. She was talking till the end.
Thank you, that's perfect.
Don't know.
I think we should wrap it up there. Cecilia, thank you very much. It's been absolutely fascinating. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. And
oh, great. Thank you. Likewise.
It's been fun sharing a lot of stories together and chewing over the voice cut of life. Brilliant. Well, thank you ever so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
It's been fun. I'm sorry to have occupied all your evening. Please send my apologies to your husband.
Okay, bye.
Okay, cheers. Bye.
Source Elements on the Mic was recorded using Source Connect. Source Elements on the Mic, the audio and remote working podcast for thinking ears. Source Elements.